not here at the moment, but we expect him shortly. Vice Chair Starr is in for his surgery, and so I came off the bench. I'm chair now. So we'll see what we can do here. So we're open up public hearing on House Bill 2933. Ask that Colonel Mike Caldwell come forward. He's here. There he is.
Do you want me to go through it, Senator?
So, Mr. Chair.
That's right.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Since you're now in control and charge, are we limited to what's on the agenda?
We'll see. Okay. Welcome, Mr. Colonel Caldwell. We'll start with staff to give us a summary of what we have, and we'll look forward to your testimony.
Chairman Metzger and committee members, with House Bill 2933B, what this bill does is it eliminates the outstanding personal income tax liability, interest, and penalties for a member of the armed services who is on active duty or who is a member of the National Guard, the military reserve forces, or the militia. They have to be performing service under Title 10 for 90 days or more consecutively, and then they lose their life while on active duty. So it is specifying that the personal income tax interest and penalty is provided to taxpayers who die on active duty military service on or after September 11, 2001. Now, the thing that would be helpful to, one thing that wasn't really discussed on the House side, but would be helpful to the Department of Revenue, is just to clarify that this would be the personal income tax liability of the taxpayer who is the military reservist or National Guard member only, not that it could pertain to an entire income tax liability of a joint return. So that's just important to clarify in the bill. It's a little ambiguous about exactly what tax liability it could be, and it could apply to joint returns' entire tax liability. It permits taxpayers to amend their prior year tax returns until December 31st, 2006. And then it also has another deferral portion where it allows all Oregon active duty military personnel 6 months after they return to Oregon to pay their unpaid personal income tax liability, interest, and penalties. This, again, is effective for future active duty military personnel returning to Oregon on or after 90 days after the end of the legislative session. So basically that is the two main components. Again, it applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st or back to September 11, 2001. Now, what you also have is a -B3 amendment. Now, the B3 amendment is the same elements of Senate Bill 19. So what Senate Bill 19 did was exempt from personal income tax the military compensation for active duty, and again, they have to be Title 10, active duty, Oregon National Guard, military reservists, or organized militia who perform their military service in Oregon. So under current law, if you perform Title 10 active duty service outside of the state of Oregon, you are already tax exempt for that military pay. Okay, so that needs to be clear. But what you're getting at here with this B3 amendment and with Senate Bill 19 is you're getting that those folks who are on active duty but are stationed here in Oregon. As we had testimony, there was a Umatilla group that went to Umatilla. So that is really geared towards them in particular. Now, this bill, this amendment applies to tax years beginning, goes back again, January 1st, 2001, but it is not, doesn't have a sunset in it. So it is forward. It's a permanent change, and they do, according to the Department of Military, they have some active duty military reservists who are still on active duty there in Umatilla, about 25 of them that are permanently in that status. So this would be affecting them in the future. So that's really what the change is here with the B3s versus Senate Bill 19. And again, this amendment has refunds that will be allowed to be made. People can amend their tax returns and go back to January 1st, 2001, and those refunds must be made before July 1st, 2006. So another important point to recognize with House Bill 2933 is it also includes, so everyone's clear, it's total compensation. So if folks die, if a soldier dies on military duty under Title 10, they're going to get some death benefits from the federal government. Well, this would connect with all of those death benefits that the federal government pays. So, and we've seen recently that Congress just increased that threshold for the death benefits to 100,000. So this would be, House Bill 2933 would be capturing those higher benefits. And so that is then embedded in your revenue impact, is the impact from those higher death benefits. Now, as we talked about some with 2542, the reconnect bill, that bill would also get at the death benefits and connecting us automatically to those federal law changes. But this by itself would also get us there with the death benefits. So everyone's clear on that. So as far as the revenue impact itself, basically initially you're going to be seeing those refunds and whatnot and the higher death the military benefits. So it's a loss in 506 of 1.2 million, and then the whole 0507 biennium of 1.33 million. But then in the outer bienniums, it's much smaller because then you just have the higher death benefits and only assuming a much smaller number of deaths. And that would be a reduction then of 215,954 in the 0709 biennium and 206,850 in the 2009-11 biennium.
We certainly hope that projection is correct. Thank you very much. Colonel Caldwell, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. And we, of course, support both of these measures, Senate Bill 19 and this 2933. I think a couple points I'd like to bring out when we talk about revenue impacts, then what we're really talking about is a windfall for the state, because typically and throughout the last 25, 30 years, we haven't had soldiers who have been called to active duty and Title X status to the degree that we've had since September 11th. So anytime you talk about a revenue impact to the state, then that's really windfall taxes, because these normally would not be the case. So on one hand, it may be an impact from the revenue. On the other hand, this normally doesn't occur. So I have trouble calling it a revenue impact when you're really looking at a windfall if you tax it to begin with. The other point I'd like to make, and I think it's good that the committee administrators and the learned staff here on the Revenue Committee have chosen to try to work these two into one bill. I think that makes logical sense. The situation that occurred at Umatilla was with the 1249th Engineers out of Salem, Oregon, where we had a battalion who was mobilized for the war in Iraq. As it turned out, they were scheduled to go. At the last minute, they were pulled off of the deployment list, and they said, we're going to leave you here at Fort Lewis, and you can do stuff around here that we need done. Engineers, of course, they're a very capable lot. And at the end of the day, about a third of these soldiers were designated to do duty at Umatilla Army Depot. Their compadres, who were right across the river in Yakima Firing Center doing duty, did not get the tax. So simply by luck of the draw, since they were on Title X status and they were assigned over to the federal property in Umatilla Army Depot, they were taxed and their buddies weren't. So we tried to, at the last part of the last session when we realized this, we tried to push through a bill that would correct that, and it did end up faltering went through the Senate, passed fairly rapidly, got to the House, some other attachments got added to it in the 11th hour, and it weighted it down and it didn't move. So this will be a clean piece that will correct that error and get these soldiers back, at least so they don't end up paying a liability, simply because a commander said, well, you this platoon here, you go there. So we didn't think that was fair. We didn't think that was right. And the provision that calls for in line 9 is that you have to have a change of status from Title 32 status, which is under the control of the governor, to Title 10. And so, therefore, it doesn't affect every active duty person, like recruiters or some other active duty person that might be here in this state. So it only affects those that by virtue of their membership in the Oregon National Guard and Oregon residency, they would be taxed. So we think that's good. We think that's a good way to fix that and make the playing field level. And we also think it's good that, from a policy standpoint, we don't think it's right the state should profit taxation on the fact that somebody is killed while doing their duty for this country. So we're very supportive of the bill. We appreciate all the hard work that this committee has done and your staff has done to fold these two together and make it a workable document and make it a workable legislation. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions for Colonel Caldwell, Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel, I guess just want to get clarification based on what the staff has told us that we need to make it clear as to what income would be receiving this treatment as compared to, let's say, on a joint return. I just want, if you'd put that on record as to the position that the department would have on that. And also, I guess for staff, if we adopted B3s, do we still plan to move the 19 since it's included in it?
Chairman Deckard and Senator Brzezinski, you don't have to move the 19 if you don't want to. It's up to you. You have everything in the 19, plus you're going forward in the future with the dash B3.
Okay. I mean, the chair is going to give us some guidance on that. But on the other question, Connell?
Could you restate that? I'm not sure exactly where.
When staff was going through, they said that we needed to have clarification as to this would only apply to the income of the deceased. If it was a joint return, it seems reasonable, and I am just wondering if you had any comment to the contrary to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, no, I think that's a reasonable way to approach the situation. Again, it's a circumstance that certainly we would hope would not happen, but since it did happen, it would seem logical and good public policy not to collect taxes off of that benefit.
That the other part was, I think, on the joint return. If you have a joint return, it does seem to me to be appropriate policy that you would only apply this to the deceased income.
We would agree with that, okay. Senator. Yes.
Other questions for Colonel Caldwell? Senator Brzezinski, what I intend to do on these is we have, a number of National Guard and Veterans bills, and talk to Representative Butler. And at the end of hearing the ones that we're going to hear today, including 19, I was going to ask Colonel Caldwell and Mr. Campbell from the governor's office, and then Senator Courtney, and then I was going to ask Senator George to join Representative Bocas and Representative Hunt, just to have one or two meetings, really lock in on what we're going to do, both on the property tax side, which then we'll include the counties on, and then on the income tax side, include the governor's office, and just figure out what is our vehicle, which 2933 is a good vehicle to make that our veterans and National Guard package, and have that group meet probably no more than one or two times and just basically vet all the bills that are out there and come back with one or two.
Sure.
And that would happen next week.
We would be, Mr. Chairman, we'd be more than happy to work with that group. That's I think, a very good group to work with. The only caution I would make is that, again, we tried to get something through to take care of this problem last session, and it got weighted down at the end of the session, and anything that would weight this down we would not like to see, because it's imperative, I think, that we correct this error for this one small group of soldiers.
Yeah, I know that this is one of your biggest priorities.
It is.
Is getting this taken care of and not losing it. And that was the thought that at least Representative Butler and I had, is that we better get one vehicle that we all nod on, that this is the one,
right,
that we've paid for, that's in the budget, and then move that one rather than have six or seven or five different vehicles kind of moving, and then you only have to track one bill.
That would be a delight.
Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
This is another alternative based on the results of last session. It may be wise to take this one as a single bill and use another vehicle for everything else. So in the work group, if you all would consider that, just to make certain that this, for some reason, doesn't get weighted down with people. I mean, interested parties may all be in agreement, but as we all know, once something gets to the floor, sometimes there's stuff that's not anticipated that occurs.
Mm-hmm. Senator George, did you note those comments?
I certainly was thinking the exact same thought. So.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Colonel. I am going to, we have Senator Cordley here, so I'm going to open a work session on Senator Cordley's bill. And then we'll return to our veterans and National Guard bill. Close the public hearing on 2393 and Senate Bill 19. Open a work session on Senate Bill 315. And Mr. Cruz and Senator Gordley, if you'd like to come up. And Paul, I know you've worked with Ms. Harshenko and the senator and on this amendment.
Great.
Senator Garland.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Abel Gordley, Senate District 23. I want to first thank the committee chair for bringing the bill back for work session. Also acknowledge the work of your staff, Paul Warner, Elizabeth Harshenko in the Department of Revenue, and her staff. And then, of course, my own legislative aide, Sean Cruz, whose work makes it possible for us to be having this discussion again this morning about Senate Bill 315, which you have before you, in fact, is a replacement to the original bill. And if you go to Section 3, on page 2 of the dash 1 amendment dated 6/15/05, what you have captured there basically is what we are anticipating to happen next, that the legislative revenue officer, in consultation with the Department of Revenue, local governments, and the National Conference of State Legislatures, shall analyze any issues that might result from adoption of the streamlined sales and use tax agreement in this state, the state of Oregon, including implications for the economy of Oregon, the revenue system of Oregon, and state and local tax policy options. And then reading further, the measure calls for a preliminary report and some analysis and recommendations for possible legislation that shall be submitted to the interim committees related to revenue no later than September 1st, 2006, with a final report coming to the 74th Legislative Assembly no later than February 1st, 2007. The measure before you has no fiscal impact that I am aware of. And again, the Dash 1 amendment just lays out an opportunity for Oregon to find out what benefits there would be from participating in the streamlined sales tax agreement.
Questions for Senator Gordley or Mr. Cruz or Paul? Paul, anything to add, Mr. Cruz? I know you all had a couple meetings and worked this out.
Mr. Chair, just one thing that I did add in your packet to give you kind of a flavor for the things that we look at. There was actually from the Department of Revenue news clippings a decision in the California court about sales that Border has through the Internet. Decision that those were taxable, and I think that what we'll continue to see is sales tax states wrestling with this issue on how to define nexus and how to deal with remote sellers. So it's something that I think does have some pretty significant implications for all the states.
It was a monumental occurrence when this happened, the multi-state agreement. It really laid the groundwork nationally for a problem that whether it's California or Utah or Washington had, and they fixed it, which has implications obviously for Oregon that now they are kind of working together to solve what was going to be a huge problem for them. So this is timely for us to be looking at this. Senator Metzger.
Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 315.
Senator Metzger's move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 315 discussion. Barbara, will you call the roll on that, please?
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Senator Polzanski.
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr.
Excused.
Chair Deckard.
Votes aye. Motion passes. Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 315 as amended by the Dash 1 Amendment to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger's moved. Any discussion on that motion? Senator Metzger's moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 315. Barbara, will you please call the roll?
Senator George.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Senator Podzanski.
Aye.
Senator Deckard.
Votes aye. Motion carries. Congratulations, Senator Gordley. Will you do the honors on the floor and carry this bill?
I'm happy to do that, Mr. Chair, and I would also request your assistance on the floor as Chair of the Revenue Committee. I think it would be very helpful to have your voice in that floor discussion, helping to paint or frame the context of why this is important for Oregon at this time.
Yeah, I hope I don't lose you any votes when I do speak. I'll try to be very, very succinct.
We'll be just fine. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
We're going to go back to, and those are here who are here for 2191. I think we'll get to it in about, my guess would be 25 minutes. So you're free for coffee if you'd like. Reopen a public hearing on 2933, House Bill, Senate Bill 19, and House Bill 2945. And Mr. O'Reilly, I have you signed up. And Paul, if you could, if we could just remove one chair. You've got this down. And Colonel Caldwell, are you good to go on your testimony, or would you like to testify to this bill too? You're good.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. We work with the House Committee on Veterans Affairs to bring forward this bill in an attempt to help further assist our state's disabled veterans. This bill will benefit those who served our nation and through this service our state during times of conflict. Now, as you can imagine, most of the veterans I'm here representing today have rather significant disabilities. They're all paralyzed. Many received their injury during a time of conflict. Others served faithfully and returned in relatively good physical condition, only to be disabled by the whims of fate. Regardless of where, when, or how their resultant disabilities occurred, or how their needs are met, whether through the VA or private health insurance coverage, each has incidental expenses directly related to their disabilities. Many of these veterans are on Social Security and use Medicare Part B. I recently read that the monthly premium for this will be raised by 10% to 13%, while the COLA for 2006 will only go up by about 2.6%. This bill will help these veterans meet these additional expenses. As a person with a disability, almost not a week goes by where I will not incur out-of-pocket expenses directly related to my disability. This might be anything from medical supplies to minor wheelchair repairs. This benefit will give the veterans about $200 a year in tax relief. For most of us in this room, this amounts to being nothing more than latte tips. For the veteran, it may mean the ability to stay in or having to sell their home. Though I won't benefit personally from this bill, my injury occurred related to my military service. It occurred in a time between conflicts, and I don't qualify. I'm aware of the great benefit this bill will provide for those who have sacrificed on our behalf. And on their behalf, I respectfully request your support for House Bill 2945.
Thank you.
If there's any questions I can possibly answer, I'll try my best.
Well, thank you, Mr. Riley. Questions for Mr. Riley? Well, I've enjoyed our conversations. You've been a very constructive voice on moving these bills forward that affect veterans and current National Guard members. If you'd like to sit in on the work group that we're having, that's going to be discussing what package of bills come out. You're more than welcome. And if there's anyone else that would like to sit in, I think they'll meet probably Monday of next week, and we'll look at rescheduling the bills sometime early next week. So if anyone would like
that very much,
to join that group, just let me know or let Mr. Warner know. Questions for Mr. Riley?
Thank you. And
thank you so much. Representative Nelson. I did not see you. I hope you just came in. Oh, good, you did. So please come on up. I know this is, these are issues that you have championed and shepherded through the legislature, and happy to say they're in the Senate now and on their way.
Chair Deckard and Senator Pozanski and good administrator, thank you so much for hearing these bills today. After this week's flag ceremony and masking of the colors and breaking ground for the Afghan-Iraqi memorial, I find it very difficult to even talk about these issues. Being a parent of 8 assorted children, praise God, I've never lost a child. I've never served in the service, the armed forces, and I've never been to war. And so I find that those who have given us this very opportunity today for me to be here speaking as I want to. Also, these veterans and those who are our fallen heroes have given us the right to assemble as we are assembled today. I'm so sad that for the past 50 years we have, as a legislature, greatly neglected our veterans and our military. We've not had a veterans committee in all these years. Though we've had some intent, none of it has really materialized. So I'm here today on behalf of all of these three bills for our veterans and for those families. Who have lost a loved one who gave the ultimate sacrifice for us. In my opinion, we can never do too much for them because we'll never be able to repay them. I feel that these measures today are appropriate, they're justifiable, and they're the right thing to do. And I will greatly appreciate your support.
Representative Nelson, you are correct. There is nothing that we could possibly do, nothing that would in any way, this is just our best efforts, and your leadership has kept this issue front and center, this legislative session, more than I think anyone I've been a part of.
That's right.
Where veterans and the National Guard and folks who are wearing the uniform for our country have been more at the forefront of this legislative session, and I think a lot of the credit goes to yourself for ensuring that that occurs, and ensuring what Colonel Caldwell said previously, where bills died in the final days that would have had a positive impact. People don't understand this process at all, but I don't think any Oregonian could understand how a bill that would benefit folks who have lost a loved one or how that could not make it to the governor's desk for signature, no matter what. So we will ensure that doesn't happen. I know you will ensure that doesn't happen. And thank you for your leadership.
Thank you all very much.
And before you go, I have to make sure there's no questions for Representative Nelson. Or
just thank you. It's a long time coming, and it's just a great thing that's happened.
Thank you for your leadership. Anyone else? We are open. We have public hearings open on the three bills, 2933, Senate Bill 19, House Bill 2945. Anyone else that would like to testify on those bills, we'll reopen them if Representative Hunt gets here. Anyone else would like to testify? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2933, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 19, close the bill, public hearing on House Bill 2945. Thank you to everyone who's helped shepherd those bills through the process. We'll return to them next week on our agenda. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 593. And Mary. it's an emotional issue.
Senate Bill 593A Amendment Amended 3. We've gone through this before. We had a public hearing on it. And basically what it does is it establishes a property tax special assessment program for land subject to a proposed conservation easement. Allows the land presently subject to exclusive farm use, non-exclusive farmland, forest land, or wildlife special assessment to be transferred to the proposed conservation special assessment without payment of additional tax. If disqualified from the proposed conservation easement special assessment designation, additional taxes will be due based on the difference that would have otherwise been assessed against the land for up to 10 years. Now, under the, just as background for this, under current law, a property owner who wishes to designate a portion of his or her farmland, forest land, wildlife habitat for conservation may lose those special assessments on the portion of his or his property that, if the easement precludes the owner from engaging in farming or foresting of timber. If the property is disqualified from forest or farmland special assessment, the owner has to pay the back taxes, and they may be due in arrears as well. Okay, a Dash 4 amendment came forward on this bill within a half an hour ago, that would add to this bill the addition of an application fee of $250 when an applicant decides to file for this easement. So the Dash 4 would be added to the Dash 3.
Could you clarify, you said that just came in?
It came in this morning to me,
okay.
I believe.
The counties came to me a day or two ago, admittedly late in the game on this one, but wanted this amendment, so we're going to hear from Gil. And Justin, do you want to come on up and bring whoever represents the proponents with you, and we'll hear kind of both sides. And
we don't have a quorum now for the work session.
Yeah. Oh.
We're at sub.
We're at
work
session. Yeah, so we got to get out of a work session right until we get.
Or just go find somebody.
If you could, would you? Not at all. Gerald's a good man. And we can't do anything until we get a third member.
They're all in hearing room B.
They're testifying on a bill in hearing room B.
So, but we have another public hearing. We may want
to. Yeah, I'm just going to stand at ease here for a moment. I'm going to close the work session for just a moment. We've got our two other members are next door, and we'll stand at ease for. Work session on Senate Bill 593, and we'll listen to Gerald Kubiak and Gil from the counties, and then we'll hear from the proponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, accompanied by Gerald Kubiak, who represents Washington County. I had introduced this at the last public hearing on this bill. We're not in position as counties to absorb any more administrative functions in the assessor's office. That was confirmed this last interim by a study of Department of Revenue saying there of the eight critical functions in assessment and taxation, counties are inadequately funded in three of them. So we bring this request to you that an explanation of why we need this fee. This is a different kind of filing process from the normal A&T processes because it involves third-party holders and landowners, and it's property-specific. It's not a cookie-cutter process. Easements will require individualized attention, these particular easements, and they are property-specific. Our proposal for a $250 one-time application fee will cover two sets of responsibilities. First, processing the application, which includes identifying the acreage, mapping the easement, record and maintain, potentially perpetually, the potential additional tax liability. And we expect a lot of inquiries and potential subsequent owners and title companies about that tax liability. There'll be probable inspection of the property to ensure that the county identifies the areas and understands the requirements of the easement. The second set of responsibilities that this would pay for, again, one-time fee, is the periodic review every 3 years where the holders of the easement report to the county assessors that the landowner is maintaining property according to the agreement. This potentially occur perpetually. There probably, if the county is able to do it, will be on-site audits to confirm that. And if there is disqualification, then there's the disqualification process that would have to take place, and it would involve calculating the back taxes and so on. So this is our request, Mr. Chair, that we have this fee for this extraordinary service added to the bill, not with the intention of killing the bill, but with covering our costs.
Thank you. Mr. Kubiak.
Good morning, Chair Decker, committee members. For the record, Gerald Kubiak, representing Washington County as well as Clean Water Services, which is a ORS 451 service district that provides sanitary sewer and stormwater management in urban Washington County. And on behalf of both of those agencies, I want to say that we support generally the changes that Senate Bill 593 makes. We support conservation easements as a tool. Given that they're voluntary, they're flexible, they're incentive-based rather than regulatory in nature. Wanted to be here to indicate the county's support and commitment to the proposal here for the $250 fee. We believe it's justified, it's reasonable, it's modest, one time only, and I think as Mr. Riddell indicated, the changes the bill makes does give rise to a significant degree of additional work that's sort of ongoing in nature, so we think the one-time fee is reasonable. I guess beyond that, I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you for the chance to speak to this.
Yeah, thank you. Questions, Senator Pesansky.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I do have a question. I mean, hearing that this came in today, it's first time for me to see it. I know that we're at a point where we're ready to start moving stuff. It's a Senate bill. The application fee, I'm not saying $250 is not appropriate, but there's been no discussion from what I'm hearing as to being able to justify putting that amount into the bill at this point. I feel more comfortable at this point moving the bill without the A4s and allow you to move that over on the House side where they can actually have the discussion as to whether a set amount of $250 is the most appropriate and necessary amount.
May I respond, Mr. Chair?
Please. Yeah, thanks.
There was a hearing. I'm not sure that you were able to attend, Senator Pesansky, Mr. Chair, Senator Pesansky, on this bill initially. And
I was here. I don't remember talking about a $250 fee. I heard that there may need to be a fee, but no discussion as to the amount or what is going to be used for. And Gil, I appreciate what you put on the record, but I, at this point, feel uncomfortable putting something in with not allowing, I mean, the proponents will come there and say something, but I can only already imagine them and say, well, how do we know this is the right number? And it seems to me at this stage, why don't we move the bill, Mr. Chair, as it currently is, and allow the A4s to be part of the discussion on the House side? And that way, it can be discussed in fuller and allow both sides to err as to whether or not that's the correct amount, or should it be worded in another way that allows a reasonable fee that to be set, because it could change from county to county, depending on whatever the actual needs are. What I've heard you put on the record says it's a $250 one-time fee that could cover up for multiple different costs. And maybe that's going to be a little too restrictive as compared to being generous.
Mr. Chair, I see it. I'm not going to persuade Senator Pesansky.
That would be my request, is if it buys you a few weeks to work with the proponents. They realize the hill they have to climb to get this bill through the House, I think, given the date that we're at, and when we adjourn.
Yeah.
So that would be my request, is start talking to them, see what happens in the House. We've got the language, Senator Metzger.
I just have one question just to help me up a little bit on the fee thing. Could you tell me why we would have to have that fee in statute? I mean, just explain that to me. Because, as recorded from stuff, Clackamas County in the day, they raise fees all the time. We have Measure 37. Counties have created fees of different levels. They haven't gone to the state for that. So why would this particular fee have to be in statute?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I'm happy to answer that question. In this particular area, assessment and taxation, the statutes are structured such that the and the courts have ruled that the counties are agents of the state. They cannot impose fees in the context of assessment and taxation on their own. It is a statutorily driven and rule-driven process. The Department of Revenue is a supervisory authority. We follow their instructions. We have no separate authority to raise fees, so we have to, unfortunately, have to come to you for these things that crop up from time to time.
If Senator Metzger's finished, I'd like to just follow up on that.
Yeah.
But, Gil, if we gave the statute the authority for the counties to set these on, as a reasonable part, I think we have that authority to do it in this particular case. But I want to make sure that whatever is reasonable for each and every county, and there's a process for that to occur, and it may be... it may be best, and maybe I haven't heard from my county as to $250 being able to cover their cost as compared to what another county may have. And what I'd hate to see is run something through to find out that it wasn't high enough to cover the cost, or at the same time, on the contrary side, if it wasn't going to take $250 to profit, that the have to pay that fee. So I think we could actually have the statutory language to give the authority to the counties for that type of structuring, as Senator Rector said, through the rule process.
Mm. Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I agree with that legal interpretation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank appreciate you. The work that you put in on this. I don't know. Yeah, you're good. We're in work session.
Senator Deckard, I moved Senate Bill 593 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger's moved Senate Bill 593 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there objection to that motion? Seeing none, the bill moves to the floor, and
looks like Schrader is the sponsor.
Who loves this bill? Senator Schrader does? Senator Schrader will carry the bill.
And if we need a backup, you want me to just be second chair?
Do you want to carry it?
Well, no. I'd rather have the sponsor have that opportunity.
He's voting no on other people's bills now. I don't know if you want this, Justin.
Wait, get it. Out of Schrader's when he carries the bill.
I don't know if you want this. Well, it's a work session on Senate Bill 593. Representative Volquist, Representative Hunt, please come on up, and I'm just going to open a public hearing on, although y'all are free to talk about the work that you've done, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2933, House Bill 2945, the two House bills, and recognize our two members of the State House of Representatives.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. I want to especially focus on House Bill 2945A. Really go through some of the history behind this bill, and I missed the introduction from your staff, so your capable staff may have already been through some of the history. But, I mean, fundamentally we've had a problem because we have not kept pace with inflation. If we had an inflation adjustment factor for both the property tax exemptions for disabled vets as well as for the means test that had been in since this was first instituted in the 1950s, we would not be here today. When there was finally an inflation adjustment factor applied in the late 1990s, it was really too late because inflation had already far surpassed and the property tax exemptions for disabled veterans had already fallen far behind the rate of inflation. I would call your attention mostly to those three numbered items there near the bottom of my testimony, because the impacts of this bill really are on three categories. Disabled vets with a service-connected disability, who would have their property tax exemption increased from the current, it's almost $14,000, to $18,000. So it would increase that. The inflation adjustment is already in statute for that, so that would continue to adjust by 3% a year in the out years. The second category, disabled veterans who have a non-service-connected disability, but that one that has been certified by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. For those, it would also raise the level, again, from about just over $10,000 to about $15,000, again, which would be continued to be adjusted for inflation. The third category is maybe the most confusing. That is for disabled vets who have a non-service-connected disability. They do have a disability, but they've not yet been certified by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. My colleague, Representative Boquist, may be able to address better the time-consuming nature and the delays that are inherent in the Department of Veterans Affairs process for getting a disability rating. Once upon a time, you used to be able to go in, if you had a disability, get rated, you're out the door. Today, it's many months or years of waiting to get that disability rating. These folks do have a disability. They have been certified by a physician, but it's not a DVA physician. So for them, in statute today, and this would continue to be true, there is a means test. They can still qualify. There's just an economic means test for them to qualify. Unfortunately, that means test has been fixed in statute at $8,778, never adjusted for inflation, just been fixed there for a long time. This would change it in two ways. It would raise it up to 185% of the federal poverty level, which is a common means test for poverty. But it would also, by tying it to the FPL, it would therefore adjust it for inflation, and we would not have to come back session after session to get that dollar amount raised. So it would leave the means test in place, but enable them to more easily qualify with a more reasonable means test. It would also mean that FPL, obviously, if you have a family of one versus a family of five, it's a different level. So it factors in that as well. Fundamentally, this raises the level of qualification, enabling more people to qualify for the property tax exemption. These are all disabled vets we're talking about, and also ensure that somebody's lack of a DVA disability rating doesn't hold them back from being able to qualify. I would urge your support and turn it over to my good colleague, Representative Boquist.
Come on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senators, first I thank Representative Hunt. He and I co-carried this on the floor. We sit together on veterans, and unlike Representative Hunt, I sit on revenue, so I know Lizbeth did this three times already on the House side. So she's got it down to a science, and we work together. I just want to cover a couple of key points about the importance of this particular bill, 2945, and where we are today versus where we were when we were all younger. What we have today is the largest mobilization since World War II transpiring of our Guard Reserve component soldiers across the country. Whether we like it or not, whether we agree with it or we disagree with it. The good news is, and I hate to say this, we only have 45 dead in the state of Oregon. The reason that's good news is because of force protection issues and medical issues, we have reduced the catastrophic death rate down to 1 to 8. Now the bad news. What that means is for the 45 individual citizen soldiers and reserve and active component from the state killed, from the state that have been killed so far, there are 8 for every 1 that have a catastrophic injury. And a good example of that is in the Veterans Committee. We have a staff sergeant from the Oregon Army National Guard, and I'm only pointing that out. We've got reserve component, Army Reserve, Air Force Reserve, Marine Corps Reserve, and even Merchant Marine out there. But the issue here is this staff sergeant, as Representative Hunt said, doesn't have his qualification yet, and under the program of 40% disability, he has lost his right leg. He lost his right leg. He came to our hearing with some fairly significant modern technology so that he can walk. However, that staff sergeant at a 40% disability under the federal system would receive $1,041 a month from the federal government for the rest of his life, having lost his leg. He would be in the poverty level. And the average individual that has been mobilized and sent off to war, whether we agree or disagree again, is a specialist or a corporal. And at a 40% disability, they would get $754 a month for the rest of their life, having lost a leg or an arm. Having been a deputy commander of a major command in Iraq, I can tell you right now that 90% of our catastrophic injuries were either a lost leg or a lost arm. And that's what these people are facing. And so in this particular bill, when we're targeting in, we're not just going back and doing what Representative Hunt said, which is identifying the cost of living. We're looking to the future here because we know for a fact right now we've got, as we sit today, almost 400 veterans that are at least half the age of any of us that are coming back from Iraq as citizen soldiers that fit into this category. And that's the importance of this. The days, and I want to dispel the myth that when you retire from the military or you're disabled from the military, there's some huge, huge financial reward. The fact of the matter is the average individual is going to make less than $1,000 a month. And that's the importance of this bill, to help our Oregon soldiers. I would like to tell you, as with the other bills, that we should, you know, beat the federal government up and that the federal government should do things, whether it's a Democrat or Republican administration. But the fact of life right now is it's not. And if we don't take care of them, they're going to be out in our communities across the state. And so this is one of those mechanisms we can put in place. And on record, I'd like to thank the cities and the counties for helping us with this, because everybody worked together on this. And I think I heard passing a television, Mr. Chair, as you stated so eloquently, that whether you're a Democrat or Republican or a senator or a representative, this legislature is going to take care of veterans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Comments or questions for... So, Representative Volquist, I think I've chatted with you about this. So we're going to have a group, and I'm going to ask you to kind of take the lead on it, just to ensure that we do what you said and Colonel Caldwell said, which is make sure we get it done and nothing gets left on the table. So I've asked yourself with Representative... I talked to Representative Butler, Representative Hunt, Colonel Caldwell, Senator George, and then Senator Courtney and Craig Campbell from the governor's office to get together, figure out what bill or two that all of we can put them together, and then we'll just put it back on the agenda. So as soon as y'all can meet, and I wouldn't worry about making sure everyone's schedule fits, but as soon as y'all can meet, let me know, we'll reschedule whatever bill you decide we're going to combine and move our package through.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Amazing enough, as a freshman, I'm already doing that in about five areas, so I'm very experienced at cutting stuffing now.
Now we're going to let him do this now, Senator George?
Well, he's perfectly sure.
Mr. Chair, with the exception of the dog bill, we're just going to leave it as is.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Senator Pazanski, yes.
Representative Volquist, the information you just gave us is to having 45 dead Oregonians, and then you gave us a ratio of, you said, I think there are 400 leukemia or they're coming back to our state that would fit these categories. I'm wondering from your time over in Iraq, as well as I know that you're continuing to follow what's happening over there and stuff, can you give us a number as to casualties? I've heard stuff that it's like 10 to 1. Or even maybe even greater, that at one point after 1 year we had 10,000 people who had been taken out of the country, out of Iraq, that were not able to continue their service, not only for physical injuries but also other incapacities.
Mr. Chair, I can speak from my experience over there, Senator, in regard to what I experienced in a major command, which is a divisional command, and basically it was the assistant commander for all of Iraq and three other countries for special operations. And I don't think we were uncommon, and my peers were all one-star generals, would say pretty much the same thing, and all the statute of limitations is all out now. Generally speaking, you have an 8-to-1 catastrophic rate. So for one killed, there's 8 catastrophic. Interesting, having said that, you have about a 1 to 20 rate of combat injuries, and you have an additional 1 to 20 rate of, depending on whose math, whether it's Wolf math, English math, or whatever, there's another 1 to 20 of casualties there, that if the vehicle rolled over or if the wound didn't, for whatever it was, weeks later. And so, generally speaking, I think the number is about 1 to 42. So if you look at the numbers now over 2,000, you can do the math. And you won't find those, you will find some of the wounded categories out there, but you won't find the individuals that ended up with typhoid, bit by camel spiders, rolled things over, got cholera, got malaria, all those other lovely things, like dysentery and all that stuff, and they don't publish those numbers. But my general feeling, in fact, ours was slight, it was 1 to 42 in the 8.5 months I was in command.
Thank you. Other thoughts or comments? I know Barbara's glad her son is home as she hears the spider in cholera. Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Let us know. Senator George, also let us know when we're ready to move on this. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2933, House Bill 2945, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2191. What's that?
Did you want to
I didn't.
So, Chairman Deckard and committee members, to switch gears now with House Bill 2191B, this basically is dealing with the Hollywood industry in the sense of bringing television and film productions to Oregon. So what it's doing is creating a new rebate for people who invest $1 million or more in actual expenses on film, television shows, or commercial productions in Oregon. It details that the Oregon Film and Video Office will pay a rebate to a taxpayer who has been certified by the office and has made special withholding payments and has verifiable actual production expenses to support a claim for a labor rebate. Then it specifies that the labor rebate shall equal the amount withheld and deposited into a Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Fund. And then it outlines the requirements for qualifying film productions. It allows the Oregon Office of Film and Video to deduct the amount of the labor rebate costs incurred to verify the actual film production expenses, as well as the cost of an accountant to review or audit this account. Then it provides the Oregon Office of Film and Video with rulemaking authority and the ability to pay those rebate checks to their eligible taxpayers. And if a taxpayer does not have verifiable actual film production expenses in excess of $1 million, then the office may not pay that labor rebate, and the monies in the account may be used for purposes of the Office of Film and Video. Then it sunsets the labor rebate on January 1st, 2012. It establishes the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Fund in the state treasury. Interest earned in the Green Oregon Labor Rebate Fund is retained in that fund, and all monies in that fund are continuously appropriated to the Economic and Community Development Department for then the purpose of transferring those funds to the Office of Film and Video to make those labor rebates each year. Now, the thing that's different than a lot of, you know, tax credits and stuff is it's not, it doesn't have a fixed rate. What you have is a special withholding rate. And again, what you're doing is you're withholding taxes now, not for the purpose of going to the general fund and going to pay the income taxes. That money that is going to be for those employees of those commercial productions, they're going to have a special withholding rate of 6.2%. And so this is just an average rate that is set now in statute, but it was just comprised by looking at the average wages of the different employees in this industry. But I want to make that clear. This is not at all going to represent the withholding rate that those folks would have been having if they had had to use the withholding tax tables that we have under current law. So you're now just creating, this average withholding rate of 6.2% of the compensation that is paid for employees. Then that money goes to the Green Light Fund. It does not go to the general fund. So that's the difference. That's how you get the loss in revenue from this particular bill.
So how was the 6.2 arrived at?
Well, Senator Decker, it was just one that I had to come up with, and I had to look at the most recent year that we had. It was 2002 as far as employment data and stuff and the average wages. But, you know, you think about it. Think of all the different people who would be on a film production and all the different wages they would. I mean, it's quite a range of wages that you would have. So coming up with an average is not, it's just an average. It's not reflecting any one particular person's, withholding rate. And each production is going to be very different. A commercial big film production would be much different than a little, TV or, even commercial or something. So, but that's what they wanted. They wanted some average withholding rate. And so that's what you have there is a 6.2% rate. Now even that, one more component to it, that's just to set it initially. Then for tax years 2007 and beyond, then you have the Department of Revenue may prescribe by rule a different withholding rate. So they don't have to stick with the 6.2%. Then the Department of Revenue will prescribe a rule, and they will have to go, supposedly they're going to have to go through all the different employees and basically try to estimate after a couple years of using this withholding rate of 6.2% and make an estimate as far as whether or not that's accurate. Well, but the language in the bill is not real constrictive to the Department of Revenue. They don't have to. It's not like a true-up kind of a thing that we talked about in some other bills. This is not where the Department of Revenue is going to be bound to come up with a different rate. It just says It's on page 3, lines 20 through 25. It just says the Department of Revenue may prescribe by rule withholding percentage that reflects the department's best estimate, just the best estimate of the state personal income tax attributable to qualifying compensation. So, again, they're going to have to go through and sort through, okay, what was the withholding rate for this particular employee? And, again, you could have joint returns where you could have a spouse that could be making $100,000 and somebody in the film industry that's making $50,000, and they're going to have to determine what would have been the best withholding rate to have for that particular tax return. So, anyway, the Department of Revenue is going to make a best estimate in the future. So this rate could change from 6.2%. That's the important point. The Department of Revenue rule takes precedence over what is established here at the 6.2% in the statute. Then you have basically that requires the person who has this special withholding rate to file a report with the Oregon Film and Video Office. So those people who will be getting the rebates and employ the people, they have to file with the Oregon Film and Video Office, which lists then the total amount of compensation that is paid by the person and other information about the employees that will help the Department of Revenue be able to track those particular accounts and be able to see how much they paid in taxes and whatnot. Then it authorizes the Department of Revenue to deposit monies into their suspense account that are withheld and paid to the department that equals the amount reported to the department by the Office of Film and Video. It allows the Department of Revenue up to 0.5% of the amounts deposited into the suspense account to cover their administrative costs. Then it excludes the labor rebate from Oregon taxable income. So basically, if these folks did pay taxable income, this labor rebate that you would be paying to them would be excluded from taxes. And it's effective 90 days after the end of the legislative session. So as far as the revenue impact, I want to make it clear this is a loss to general fund revenue. Okay, you're moving withholding taxes. Okay, those are taxes. When you're withholding money, those are taxes. So we just want to make sure everyone's clear. This is not revenue neutral by any means to the state general fund. So the personal income taxes that are lost in 2006-07 is estimated, again, based on how many different film productions would come here to Oregon. I talked with the Office of Film and Video as far as how much they anticipate would be coming each biennium and things. So basically it assumes two full feature film productions, six independent films and two television movies and 10 commercials per biennium. So basically, if we did not get all those film productions here in Oregon and the person did not invest more than $1 million, then you would not have this larger revenue loss. But there could be additional productions also that don't match these assumptions. So this is all, you know, based on how many films do come to Oregon, but once they do come, then the important point to recognize is this is a change from current law as far as your withholdings now will be put into a different account, not into the state general fund. So then by the 2007-09 biennium, for full biennium, it's estimated a reduction of $3 million in the general fund, and then it's moved to the Green Light Oregon Labor Rebate Fund to pay out $3 million in rebate checks.
So, Ms. Beth, just on the final point, and it's on the back page.
Mm-hmm.
So if none of those two feature films, six independent films, and two television movies and 10 commercials come, what's the revenue impact to Oregon?
Yeah, it would be zero. I mean, it's just like what... I mean, we had the baseball bill, you know, last session.
Okay.
And everything. Yeah,
right.
I know.
Baseball.
So the baseball.
It's on the shelf.
I'll tell you, the Nationals are in first place, and that city is going crazy over the Washington Nationals. another fall note, another victory. Yeah. What would have been?
What
was it? Still in the game. But anyway, so Elizabeth.
Okay, so this is written like the baseball bill. Now, the only difference with the baseball bill is it didn't have a revenue impact in 2003-05 biennium. Okay, and that was just because we weren't anticipating them coming in the sense of earning wages and stuff for, you know, a year. And so the revenue impact was in 2005-07 biennium.
But you've got to get the economic activity. The investment has to
That's
be made
right.
to actually ever have a revenue impact. And so you could make the case,
yes.
one could, that absent the economic activity, the jobs produced, the money spent, you have no revenue impact.
Yes, but Chairman Butler, I mean Chairman Deckard, I want to make sure it's clear that we do have some, you know, workers already in this industry. I mean, in 2003, Oregon film and video industry had 2,840 workers earning a total payroll of $109 million. So it's not like this isn't not having a baseball team. I mean, I think there's a little bit of a difference there when
your
you
argument
do.
Argument would be they might have these films come in. I mean,
well, you've got an industry that's already here. I mean, you have a office that's promoting those industries to come here. So, you know, this is a change from current law in the sense of what are you going to be doing with those withholding payments that are going to those employees of people in this industry. And that's what you're doing with this bill. So, you know, we have to look at it in terms of what is the change from current law. Would this film production come with or without this labor rebate?
Mm-hmm. Other questions for Lizbeth, Senator Metzger?
Well, maybe just mostly an observation, adding on some of your comments, is because it really is a, and we'll hear from the proponents here, I'm sure, on the same subject, but the idea is to, you know, but for this bill, can we grow this industry and therefore have other revenues that aren't in this document because of the taxes and other activity and business activity that will be created by this. And the concept, and I think it's very, very well put together and very thoughtful, is to, and we've heard in this committee and other committees, I think Chairman Deckard, Senator George, over the last number of years, the competitiveness of this industry, but also how lucrative the industry is if Oregon is to really expand that. And if for this piece of legislation that this expands beyond the $109 million significantly, and there's a lot of other tax revenue that's being generated in the state that we can't account for here, which would more than offset the contributions to bringing that industry here. So, and that's the part that, and I think you made that argument, Mr. Chair, on the baseball. I mean, there's a lot of things that you know, the auxiliary impacts of having an industry is really, really hard to measure. But we do know that the multiplier of economic activity is really, if you have the right type of industry, that can have a significant impact on your economy. So, and that's, but it's hard for Lizbeth to be able to, you know, have her crystal ball to put that in this kind of a statement. Oh, she has a great crystal ball.
Good point. Veronica and Howard, do you guys want to
add anything to our
well, you know, I think the key point is would this industry be here absent this bill or the bill that we passed last session?
In fact,
we need to do
we'll
that.
Yep. Person.
The name, who you are, and
Chairman Deckard and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Veronica Reinhardt from the Oregon Film and Video Office. I'm the executive director. Chairman Deckard, to address the question of whether there would be work coming anyway that this bill would have us losing revenue on, in the last year and a half, we have not had any projects. We have not been able to recruit any projects that would qualify for this program except for projects that we have given a rebate to out of the Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund. The Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund is not, though, a viable ongoing program. There's a lot of competition for that money. It's used for a number of different sources. I can't go to Los Angeles and say, well, come talk to us, and maybe if the timing's right and the money's right and there's not a big factory, you know, also vying for that money, we might be able to kind of do a little something out of the Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund. Predictability is something that they need to have when they're looking at other states that are offering them 15% to 30% of their budgets back in tax credits or in labor rebates. So, yes, there is a lot of work going on in the film and video industry right now with our indigenous industry, with the local companies who do corporate video and that sort of thing. But the type of productions that spend more than $1 million, which is what's required to qualify for this program, are not coming without some sort of incentive at this point. So I guess I'll go through the highlights. I think everyone on the committee knows that Oregon has a long and proud history in the film industry dating back to the turn of the previous century. The industry has brought hundreds of millions of dollars of spending into our state, and one of the important things that I think Senator Metzger touched on is these are outside dollars which have a very high stimulating effect on our economy. Economists have estimated the multiplier rate anywhere from 2.2 to 2.8. I know one state uses a multiplier of 3. So it really does generate a lot of other work and a lot of other economic activity in the state. Also, our tourism industry reaps the promotional rewards when Made in Oregon movies are released on screens around the world. The city of Astoria reports that they see about 200 visitors per month in the summer of people who are coming just to see the locations from the film The Goonies that shot there 20 years ago. They just had a huge citywide celebration to celebrate the anniversary of Goonies. And, you know, their city was packed for it. The city of Cottage Grove every year now has an annual celebration to celebrate the filming of Animal House. We get called in our office still from people who want to see the locations for Stand By Me or The Shining. When Bandits came out, people wanted to go see, you know, go stay in the cabins where they filmed. Unfortunately, they were set pieces, but so there really is an ongoing economic impact. Unfortunately, where Oregon was an early leader in recruiting this industry and understanding its benefits, everybody else has figured it out now. And we are now in an era of global competition for this industry. The big bully originally was Canada. I think everybody's heard a lot of news about all the production that Canada was getting and what that did to our industry here in Oregon, especially because Vancouver being so close and to Hollywood looking, you know, enough like Oregon that there was no reason not to go there. But now it really has become worldwide, and the states within the U.S. have figured out that they can pull production back if they institute incentives of their own. At this point, and this is always changing, a growing number, at least 16 other states have very aggressive incentive packages. And this is in addition to most of the states that have sales taxes have had exemptions for the industry for many years. These are either cash rebates or tax credit programs on top of that. And in the materials that I turned in, I handed out a matrix of the incentives offered in what we consider to be the locations that are most competitive to us. States like Louisiana and New Mexico are really the talk of the industry right now. They have incentives that offer from 15 to 35% of a film's budget back in either cash rebates or tax credits, and it's worked for them. They've seen their production increase over the last 2 years, 800% in New Mexico, 1,000% in Louisiana. Louisiana did $350 million worth of out-of-state production last year, up from having done about $40 million before they had a program. The first question we hear from any producer now is, what incentives do you have? And we don't get to talk about the things like Oregon's beautiful scenery, our friendly and welcoming communities, our fantastic crew workers, our deep talent pool, unless we can get to the table with some sort of incentive program and have an answer for that initial question. Our challenge has been in Oregon to come up with a program that will put us back in competition with these other states and countries while we are in the midst of extremely limited state budgets. You know, we know there is not the ability here to do a program like Louisiana's. So our office worked with the governor's office, with Department of Revenue, and with Treasury to find a solution to this. HB 2191 is part of our answer to that challenge. What we're trying to do is put together a package of programs that taken together can be competitive for productions that want to come here anyway, but they need some financial incentive basically to convince their bean counters that it's okay to shoot here. The Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate allows us, as Lizbeth explained, to rebate back to productions the income taxes that are withheld on the wages of direct hires from new qualifying productions that would come in because of this program. Again, this program targets the type of production that we're no longer able to recruit with just our marketing and advertising. There are productions that we're not getting right now, so this is all new work that would be coming in. Also, our industry, as Senator Metzger pointed out, our industry creates almost another full-time equivalent position in other sectors of the economy for every direct hire. And so the state will still see the tax benefits from that added work throughout the economy. I mean, when a film comes in, they make major purchases from more than 100 vendors, and hotels and rental cars and things you wouldn't think of, like lumber yards and hardware stores and antique stores, retail, furniture. They set up an office. If we have a major studio feature film held here, they'll rent 15,000 square feet of office space, and they need all the office equipment and furniture and stationery and all of that to run that office. So it does create increased employment, again, in other sectors of the economy. When we combine this labor rebate in HB 2191 with a voluntary 10% rebate from Oregon merchants that will be the vendor side of what we'll be marketing as the Green Light program, and with the fact that we have no sales tax, it adds up to an attractive package to film producers. My estimate is that, and this is fairly conservative given what we've seen in other states, but also given that this is not quite at the level some of them are, is that we can bring in another $50 million in production in the next biennium, again, in addition to what we've the kind of production that we've been getting, which is smaller productions. I would also like to address the 6.2% and Department of Revenue's ability to look at that. In working with Lizbeth on that, I provided to her charts with all the union labor rates. Most productions shooting at the level that would qualify for this program would be shooting on a union contract, and then anticipated, again, the amount of work we could reasonably expect to have coming in and what would various levels of employees, how many of those projects would they be working on, and really tried to come up with what would be an accurate amount of earnings for the various level of people. We did include in the bill the ability for Department of Revenue to review that rate, and the whole point there is that we're very committed to having that withholding rate reflect what people in this industry actually pay at the end of the day when they file their taxes. And if that needs some adjustment in the future to keep that accurate and to keep a net zero impact, that's why that item is in there. And then finally, I'd like to point out the letters of support that are also in the packet. The Oregon Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus, the Oregon Lodging Association, the Screen Actors Guild, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, and the Independent Film and Television Alliance all support this bill. They know it means more work and more income for their membership in Oregon. This bill also has the strong support of our governor, and Howard Levine is here to represent the governor's office.
Thank you. Chairman Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Howard Levine. I'm Governor Kulongoski's policy advisor for the Office of Film and Video. I'd actually like to just start by making a quick point about this issue of an indigenous industry. I mean, it's certainly true that we have an indigenous industry in Oregon. The problem is that we have these talented crews, and we're going to lose them if we don't have films for them to work on. And similarly, we're at risk of losing our infrastructure. I think we have now lost our only film lab, correct? And this is a direct outgrowth of the fact that we just have not had much of this business over the last 3, 4, 5 years. But since I'm representing the governor, let me say that the governor believes that increasing the film and television production in Oregon is critical to his goal of strengthening our economy and creating family wage jobs. This is really a great business for Oregon. Film production is a clean industry. It's a high-wage industry. And as Veronica has elaborated, it is an industry that has the potential to generate millions of dollars in economic activity through both the purchase of goods and services and through tourism. As Veronica and others have noted, Oregon is losing the competition for this lucrative business because we do not have an adequate incentive program. Other states, notably Louisiana and New Mexico, have generous tax credits and other incentives that have led to significant increases in the number and sizes of films shot in those states. Veronica can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Louisiana did $350 million
in film business last year. It's not because Louisiana is such a great place to shoot films. This is about money. Maryland, that I also have a little experience with because I moved here from there, passed a very generous incentive program this year as well. In Canada, because of its incentive program, continues to attract productions that might otherwise come to Oregon. By rebating a portion of the withholding tax to 6.2% on crew salaries for productions of 1 million or more filmed in Oregon, HB 2191B will give us a seat at the table, which is really what we don't have right now. The governor has a long record of supporting Oregon's film industry, including last session's Production Investment Fund, which this committee supported. He has signed off on strategic reserve fund requests, and he has traveled to Hollywood to talk to major studio executives about the advantages of shooting here in Oregon. Those advantages are well known to most people, our locations, our crews, our access to L.A. But at this point in time, to be successful in this highly competitive environment, we need the complete green light package, the vendor rebate program, and the labor rebate. And so the governor believes strongly in 2191B and urges they do pass. Thank you. One more point about the 6.2%. Since it's an average, we are assuming that, whereas it may be a little low for some crew members, it's probably going to be a little over for others. And so we, on the one end, we may lose a little bit. On the other, we're probably going to gain a little bit.
Questions for the panel? Senator George.
Some of these program elements are pretty clever when you think about it. The one I'm laughing at here is Utah, and maybe not laughing at, but appreciating it, and it is they give a 2% additional tax break if the storyline is changed to have the setting be Utah. So you're featuring your state as part of that, and you get an additional 2%. Do we have anything like that? Because, I mean, many of the films, you know, people do recognize us, Oregon. And but if there was something like that where we could make sure that we get the promotion of the state, particularly for tourism.
Senator George, we have not written a clause like that into this bill. I think it's a very complicated bill, and we were trying to keep it as simple as possible. And one of the things that we're facing right now is that there are a lot of films that are written for Oregon that are shot in Vancouver, B.C. And so I think that a large number of the films that we would be able to pull back from here actually would be set in Oregon. We're constantly getting calls from art departments of films that are up in Vancouver saying, can you help us find signs and posters and stuff to make it look like Oregon? And we're like, and we should help you do that. Why? Talk to the tourism people because that promotion will still help them. I'm confident that a good number of these productions would actually, showcase Oregon in their storyline as well. It is certainly something to think about in the future.
We could look at that. Other thoughts or questions?
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Testimony. Okay, so we're going to close the public hearing on 2191. We're going to meet Monday next week, and it looks like our time is going to change, so I'll let you know when that will be, but I'm thinking probably 1 o'clock if that works for other people's schedules. We'll probably go Monday at 1. I don't know how that works with House Revenue, frankly. Yeah, we might have to do some sort of alternate, or I'll find out how long the House floor session, Senate floor sessions are going to go. And I can't do Tuesday, but I can do Monday. You can do Monday. Okay, well, maybe we'll load up Monday a little bit. Yeah, our church.
So, we should have to.